You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, hello, wherever you are in the world. Welcome along to the show. It is Tuesday. It's Tuesday the 16th of April, and I've arrived in Newmarket on the Rowley Mile. At this time of year, not famous for its beautiful spring-like weather and fully living up to its reputation. It's grey. It's freezing cold. It's blowing a gale at the moment. It'll be hard work for those two-year-olds in the opener here today, but the ground is pretty dry, and we're set fair for a fabulous 3 days racing when the flat season really does crank into gear. You'll be hearing in a moment from Charlie Appleby. He could win half a dozen races at least this week if the market's anything to go by. Is this the season, I ask him, where he comes roaring back after the disappointments of 2023? I think you'll be reasonably optimistic if you listen to the interview in a few moments' time. Paul Nicholls, his thoughts on the Trainers' Championship. A little bit more sanguine and philosophical than I was expecting. Tony Fry from Sunbay, Nurlan Bizikov's operation. My, haven't they got some horses in Britain and France to go to war with this season? And we'll be hearing from the representatives from Gorsebridge Sales, Ed Donoghue, along later in the show, making its return to thoroughbred auctions after 4 years out. Of course, the big auctions in Newmarket this week will be taking place just down the road from here at Tattersall's, the Craven Breeze Up sale, our first major sale of the calendar year. Lee Mottershead is with me today, and we'll start with a couple of news items, Lee, if we may. We'll start, Lee, with the news that won't surprise that many people because it's been reported on before, but the Daily Telegraph have done an investigation into cocaine use at Aintree, and guess what they found?
They found cocaine, Nick. Ben Rumsby, the Sport Investigations reporter, has produced a front page splash released onto a big feature on page four of the newspaper, talking about how on Grand National Day at Aintree, they had found significant amounts of cocaine. They investigated 40 cubicles in 10 public toilet blocks at Aintree using small wipes that turned blue on contact with cocaine. And there was lots of wipes turning blue. As you say, Nick, it is not a surprise. Charlie Brooks wrote a column in the Telegraph recently talking about his view that Cheltenham was being hampered, being spoiled by people using cocaine. It has been an ongoing story in racing for some time. I experienced something myself at Royal Ascot last year, and I wrote that about that in the Racing Post. On the Saturday of the meeting, I saw a long line of smartly suited young men walk into the gents' toilets closest to the main press room. They got in there. Once in there, they entered the cubicles two at a time, and one of them was heard to shout, "All hail King Charlie." Not sure there would have been any shouting in the blocks on this occasion, but it just underlines now that it really is a significant problem. Racecourses talk about having zero tolerance attitudes to cocaine, but that zero tolerance attitude is not resulting in zero cocaine use on racecourses.
Yeah, the only coke users here today will be ones that don't have to pay to get in. Right, let's talk about the viewing figure for the Grand National, which we touched on yesterday. It did come out in the end. The peak, I don't know whether it's the 5 or the 15-minute peak, either which way. It was 6.1 million, which is down on 7.5 last year, 7.5 the year before. And then before that, we were up into the 8s. And before that, before COVID, we were up into the 9s. And then you can go back all the way to the Channel 4 days and the BBC days where you got a few 10s in there, and right back to the 70s and 80s where you'd get 12s and 15s and goodness knows what else. So, yes, we know that TV audiences are declining, Lee. Yes, we know the audience share was a pretty respectable 60, well, very respectable 60. And yes, we know that the sun was shining in the south of England. But is this a trend that the race needs to be concerned about?
Well, yeah, I think it does, Nate, because the trend is only going in one direction. If you look at the last 5 years, 9.6 to 8.8 to 7.5 to 7.5 to 6.1. Now, if it was going in the opposite direction, racing, the race course, Jockey Club would be hailing a significant positive development in the Grand National's audience figure. Well, it's the other way around. And that is a concern. Yes, as you say, there were factors and genuine factors why the number might have gone down this year. Great weather, an earlier start time. Although 4 o'clock Grand National this year, it was 4:15 when the BBC signed off with 10 million in 2012. It is a concern. Against that, if you look at the race relative to other horse races, it still dwarfs everything else, whether we're talking about races at the Cheltenham Festival, whether we're talking about classics, the Derby, the Grand National still towers over all those. And if you look at the audience,
I suppose the question is, and I posed this a little bit yesterday, is can a horse race of any description still be a totemic national event? And I'd imagine it's the same question that's been asked by the Kentucky Derby, same question that's been asked by the Melbourne Cup. Yeah. And that's what's going through my head. And to what extent can we get people engaged in it in the week leading up to it? And if we're not, why aren't we?
Yeah. And I think that's an entirely fair question, Nick. Without trying to sound pompous, I haven't been watching much non-racing ITV programming in recent months, so I don't know the extent to which the Grand National has been cross-promoted. I do know it was promoted on BBC Breakfast on Saturday because I did a bit with Mike Bushell, and they did a great job. There was lots of promotion, I know, on the Today programme on Radio 4.
I go back to I think the penultimate time I hosted the Grand National for network, and that was for a commercial network, sort of commercial network, Channel 4. And I remember doing an insert into the one show on BBC One, even though 2 years earlier they'd lost the rights to the race. They still enough that on the one show, the Channel 4 presenter should be interviewed about the Grand National. And so, that it was like it transcended anything. It wouldn't have mattered whether you put it on, what network it was on. It was going to be watched.
Yeah, totally, Nick. Ironically, the BBC, as I say, still does a great job at alerting people to the fact the Grand National is taking place, albeit, of course, they are broadcasting it on Five Live and did again on Saturday. Perhaps there is a need now for more advertising of the race in itself. Channel 4 did actually a great job of doing that with billboards when you drove around. You knew that Channel 4 was about to broadcast a national. Maybe ITV needs to be doing more of that. They will, they were relaxed, I think, is with the response to the viewing figure. But equally, they will want more people to be watching the race. The Jockey Club will want more people to be watching the race. What I don't think, Nick, is that anyone can point to the race that we had on Saturday as a reason for the viewing figure. Unless the audience is made up of Mystic Megs and know what they're going to see, you can't blame the race that we got on Saturday, which actually was a race that you would have wanted millions more to see, because it was, I thought, such a good spectacle. Just again, just to do some sort of context for the audience, Ant and Dec finished their Saturday night takeaway program on Saturday. That had an audience of around 4.5 million people. The Grand National's average audience, the whole program was about 3.1, so not a million miles off it. It's still a lot of people watching the Grand National, but we want more people to be watching the Grand National than that, because that is the lowest figure in at least 20 years, and you probably could be the lowest figure in modern history, and that can't be a thing that we're celebrating.
No, indeed not. So hopefully it'll focus the mind in all sorts of places. Now, when you said that the guy had got into the cubicle earlier and shouted "All hail King Charlie," it might just have been that he'd backed a winner in the Royal Blue. Who knows? I felt that this was the season when Charlie Appleby was going to come roaring back, and certainly, judging by the entries this week at the Craven meeting, his strongish hand in some of the early classics, it looks as though that might be the case, certainly with some fresh young talent. That's what I put to him earlier today.
Yeah, look, we feel we're in a better position this year. you know, needless to say, as I sort of reported at the spring of last year, we didn't have any Group 1 winning 2-year-olds last year, the year before, whereas, you know, we've gone into the winter with some nice horses there that obviously won at the back end there, you know, Ancient Wisdom and Arabian Crown and Dance Sequence, you know, so we've got numerically, you know, more pattern winners there than 2-year-old pattern winners than we had the previous year. So needless to say, yeah, we've gone into the winter in better shape. What we've seen so far, we're very pleased with how they've done. Obviously, one of the first what we'll get to see out of those trio is Dance Sequence tomorrow there in the Nell Gwyn. She's done very well for the winter. Preparation's gone well, and you know, she obviously needs to go and win tomorrow to hold a position hopefully at the top of the market for the 1,000 guineas.
Obviously, it's not been a particularly pleasant spell of weather. Is she forward enough, do you think, to win the Nell Gwyn nicely enough?
Yeah, we're very much we've been very lucky. We've encountered the weather conditions, but we're, as respects to her day-to-day training, we've not missed anything there. She's still got that little bit on her, and as we know, it's going to be a long season for them. So, but she's going to be fit enough to get the job done tomorrow if good enough.
A miler through and through.
Yeah, on what we've seen so far, to be you know, as respects, would you obviously beyond people be asking me, does she look like an Oaks filly after this? No, I would be surprised. I'd say the mile will be her trip.
Okay, so she's currently 11-8 on, and that probably speaks fairly well to her chances. You've got Native Approach in the Craven Stakes. He also is a pretty short price, and it's a big runner for Too Darn Hot, who had a very good start with his first crop last season. This horse didn't run till he was three, but he's making up quickly for lost time. How much better is he now, do you think, than in those two early runs at Kempton?
Well, as we saw their first stop there, he was, you know, green there, early doors, then came into it at the right end, and you know, just had a nice sort of introduction into racing. Second time up there, travelled strongly and won nicely. Physically, he's done very well. He's a strong-minded colt, so the team have done well there, you know, keeping him as set as we can at home. Now, obviously, you know, trying to switch that early form of his now onto the turf will be interesting. Visually, he looks great on it, on what we've done, like I say, here at Moulton Paddocks. And it's there's plenty of strength and depth in there, so we'll be a lot wiser come, needless to say, after the event, but we're going in there in good shape.
And of course, you suddenly then start to try and sort out your 2,000 guineas entries. He's still an entry there, but obviously Notable Speech is the one that captured everybody's imagination when he bolted up at Kempton the other day, putting in that great closing sectional. What are you minded to do with Notable Speech?
Obviously, sitting on the fence slightly in respects to, you know, seeing how Native Approach runs on Thursday is the sort of one of the key factors to the next sort of moving of the puzzle, should we say, over the next week or so in respects to Notable Speech and Ancient Wisdom. You know, his sort of immediate thoughts when he got off the horse was, he said, no, he's got a lot of natural pace and very tactical speed that, you know, maybe he's more of a, you know, it could be suited to a French guineas, but like I say, I'll depend on how Native Approach runs and how he might figure into the race or not, as the case may be. We don't know. We'll make the decision after the event there of what Notable Speech will be doing, really.
Those are the big ones this week. I mean, there's plenty of others. I can't list them all, we'd be here all day, but everybody likes to win the first race of the Craven meeting. It's only a few moments away. Al Kudra and Halasan, you run in that. Halasan's 5-4 on. It's a good job nobody knows about that one.
Yeah, look, you've got two colts there that have been going quite well, as always. You know, ours, you know, they won't be wound up to the hilt for it, but they're two very forward-going colts. The Pinatubu is a neat, strong individual. Both of them have got speed pedigrees. What you'd say about the Halasan on home evidence, he's been very professional. Al Kudra, again, a strong individual there, as an O-name ever, been a bit more playful, but certainly got his mind on a job the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks there now. But yeah, as we're all going to be there this week, is we've got over a few balloons, and how many will stay afloat and how many will pop, we'll know by the end of the 3 days. But yeah, exciting to be back on the grass and in competitive races.
All right, that was Charlie Appleby in good mood, I thought, in good form, and sounded like a man confident of a pretty good season. And the thing is, it's all very well relying on a couple of older horses, Lee, but when you've got your sophomores, your classic horses really coming through, that's when you know you can be optimistic about the season.
He has every reason to be optimistic. Last year was very disappointing by Charlie Appleby's recent standards. If you looked at his total prize money haul in Britain last year, it was considerably less than he has had in previous years. 2021, he amassed just under £5 million in prize money in GB. 2022, it was £6.2 million. Last year, it was £2.8 million. There were significant international successes, but the three-year-olds, as a classic crop, didn't deliver. And that is crucial for any of the big superpower operations that the classic crops really produce. They didn't last year for Godolphin. That was 1 year. He will hope that it was a 1 year blip, and the raw material at this stage, one would hope that is good enough to make Godolphin competitive. And we say Godolphin because realistically, although Said Bin Sarur had a classic success with Morge last season, overall, it was a disappointing year for Saeed, and we've heard of redundancies at that yard recently. So for Godolphin, it really is all about how Charlie Appleby fares, and they will be hoping he fares well.
Okay, that's the flat racing here on the Roly Mile for the moment. I'll be talking to Tony Fry, manager of Nurlan Bizikov's Sumbay Interest, a little bit later. They're going to have a massive season, I think, as well, and they've got some interesting runners this week. But I'm going to switch back to the jumping for a moment and this Trainers' Championship. Mullin Skelton Nichols. I spoke to Dan Skelton yesterday, put a call into Paul Nichols this morning, and asked him how he felt about now, just with a couple of weeks left to go, lying third and the outsider of three in the Trainers' Championship.
Well, got plenty to do, haven't we? Been there before, obviously. I think we got a tough task. You know, Willie's got a nice little advantage and has got a serious amount of horses entered, and obviously assume so will next week. But it just depends. We need a bit of luck. Need to win a couple of big races. We've been there before, as I said, and yeah, we'll give it our best shot. As you know, we'll never give up, but it's going to be tough.
You sound a bit more philosophical than I expected.
Well, I have been for a while, really, because I could see what was going to go, and you know what was going to happen. And I've always knew Dan would be the big danger this year, because he had plenty of horses to run, and they've been going well. But after, you know, Willie had such a fantastic time at Cheltenham, if he was going to win the National, that was going to be pivotal, and that's exactly what happened. So I've sort of like not been expecting it, but knew what was going to go on, and we just need to have a good 2 weeks. So I think Dan's mortified what happened on Saturday when I saw him after, because he thought he had a real, real chance. So I think, you know, he's going to be giving it his best, as I will. And as you probably read in the paper today, I did say to Dan, we need to come up with a plan. He said, the only plan we can have is get a ferry strike next week. And that's about it. You know, but this will give it a go. I'd love to see a dry 10 days to go to Sandown with some good ground for a change, rather than running all these horses on soft ground, because that's hindered us quite a lot. But yeah, look, Willie's had a fantastic season, won all those big races. I suppose he's in the driving seat, and we've got to pull our finger out of it.
Yeah, it's very hard to push back against a Champion Hurdle winner, Gold Cup winner, Grand National winner, and four Grade Ones at Aintree, and more than that at Cheltenham.
And life, the first five in a novice hurdle at Cheltenham and things like that, all mounts up. If you can have horses win all those big races, it's obviously going to be quite hard. But then I always knew that and could see what was going to happen, you know.
Okay, just looking ahead, I mean, there are some big valuable prizes ahead. Yeah, you've got to have everything swing your way. But what chance it swings your way at Ayr this weekend?
Well, I've got plenty. The biggest problem at Ayr this weekend for me is the ground being soft, heavy in places, looking like it being slow. I mean, we've always done well there when you've got real nice, good spring ground. I think we had five or six winners there last year. And we just struggle a bit all the time on very testing ground. Don't know quite why, but just the way it is, and just the way perhaps our gallops are. But so I'd like to see it dry a little bit. But, you know, I've got Stay Away Faye to run. I've got horses, and you know, Affordil's got a lovely way in the Scottish Champion Hurdle, some nice novice hurdle. But like the novice hurdle, I think Willie O'County's got 10 entered, so you know, you're up against the battalions. But, you know, it only needs a bit of a swing, like you win if you won a Scottish National. That's big prize money. We all want to be winning that on Saturday. But I think 5-6 years ago, I was about 180 grand behind Willie going into air and ended up beating him on the last day. So it's possible, but it's going to be very, very hard. And, of course, Dan's going to be giving it his best as well.
If you don't win, do you want Dan to win?
Yeah, of course I do. I mean, that's what Dan and I said, we need a planet. But obviously, in UK, it's a bit frustrating if one of the Irish trainers win the UK Trainers Championship. So if I can't win it, of course, I'd be absolutely delighted if Dan won it. Of course I would.
How often are you speaking at the moment?
I know, like 4 times a day. Just still talking about different things, you're grounded, different things like that. I just text him for this morning. I can't believe they're watering a channel. I mean, after all this rain, and they're starting watering in places. So that was just us starting the day off with just chats, you know. But we're both in competition with each other, but we're fairly open with each other. He can read my mind and vice versa. But you know, if I can win it, I'd be delighted if he did. But obviously, we've both got a tough task. And my sort of big soul thing at the moment is I want Harry to stay in front for the Jockeys Championship, which, you know, he's 12 in front. Sean would have to get 13 to beat him and 12 to equal him. We can keep having a few winners and pick and choose some right horses to win at the smaller meetings for him, then he should stay there. And then I'd be so chuffed for him, you know.
So you're sitting there now looking at some younger horses coming up your gallops. Have you given, clearly you've given masses of thought to how you strengthen in order to withstand the might of Willie Mullins and the might of the Irish trainers? We've talked about it an awful lot. When you look at those younger horses now, do you see anything new or different, or are they sourced differently? What's your strategy at the moment?
Well, I mean, I think it's only Willie Mullins you've got to be concerned about. You know, obviously Gordon does as well, but Willie's got so many horses and just seems to be a league in front of everybody else, and they're hard to beat. But, you know, we can only stick to doing what we're doing. I'm not going to change anything. I love the racing in the UK, and if we've got horses good enough, we'll go to Ireland. But it's just it comes in cycles a little bit. You know, some of the Brave Man's Games and those older horses are probably exposed now, and we've got some lovely young horses coming through, and you just got to keep looking forward and just keep doing what we're doing. If we've got horses good enough, we'll win plenty of races. And that's what it's all about, really. And you can't change things, really. I mean, look, we're all trying to buy the best horses, and I like to think we bought some really smart horses this season for the future, and that's what it's all about.
When are we going to see Caldwell Potter? Because you obviously took him out of Aintree last week.
Yeah. He is still in at Punchestown. He's back sound again now. He's going to canter this morning. But I sort of, like, in two minds, I said to John last night, I think we probably as well to finish him now. You know, he's done all his work. He was ready to run last week. And I think I'll probably just leave him till the autumn. They bought him for the future. And I don't really want to take any. I've had a few problems with his feet, like, through the spring. And basically, he's almost run out of mileage from a shoeing point of view. It's every time I put some racing plates on, he gets a little sore. So he's probably done enough for the season, really. Just wants a nice break, and then I'll come back novice chasing in the autumn.
And do you think, I mean, given the winter we've had and given how wet it's been, you've sometimes been quite busy in the summer, sometimes less busy in the summer. Will you try and get a kick start into the new season?
Well, we will have ultimately. A lot of horses that want a good ground that haven't run yet, that may well run through into May, but that will apply to everybody. I think Harry Cobden and I were looking at the thing this morning, the Tay one. I think we've had nearly 100 less runners this season and might have done than we did last season, rough, you know, which says quite a lot. But a lot of that is we didn't bother with the summer. We had a flying start in October, and then the ground's just really stopped us a little bit. I'm not complaining, Nick. We've had a good season. We might end up winning $3 million in prize money, and Cobden's had a good season, and we just look forward, and whatever happens, I've been very lucky to win 14 championships, let alone any more. And I know Dan's feeling when he gets so close to smelling the coffee, as it were. So yeah, we're looking forward to next season. We're always looking forward.
I mean, and I've mentioned it, and it won't be lost on you. You need one more to equal Martin Pipe's record.
Yeah.
So if you don't if you don't win it this time, to what extent will that really drive you on to get it back?
Well, it's you know, you're always doing your best with what you got. I know we got a really smart team of young horses coming on through, and in the next few years, we're not going to get any it's all going to keep going forward, and you know, hopefully it'll happen in the next few years. It's, you know, you can't win the Premiership every year. You look at the football, you know, it's just impossible. It depends on the players you've got and circumstances, and you know, if we don't do it this year, we'll keep trying for another year.
Paul Nicholls there, Lee. I know it sounds strange to say about a man who's, you know, always bristling with energy, and you always feel is giving himself a chance. I thought he sounded quite almost laid back, not resigned to not winning, but certainly more philosophical than perhaps I'd expected.
Yes, I think philosophical is exactly the right word, Nick, and that is how he sounded. I suppose if you look at the numbers, they would lead him to feel like that, because Willie Mullins is setting a tremendous pace. He now leads the title race. Saturday, he's got 33 horses entered to run. He's got 10 in one novice hurdle, 6 in the Scottish Grand National. One wonders if he is in live contention going into Sandown, and he's bound to be, isn't he? As Dan Skelton said to you yesterday, he's all going to go to Sandown, whatever happens at Ayr this weekend. You suspect he might wheel out a few of those big guns that we would have normally expected to go to Punchestown. So I think it's going to be very hard for either Dan or Paul to beat Willie. But equally, they're sure as hell going to try. For Dan Skelton, this is the first real shot at winning the Trainers' Championship, and he will be giving it an all-out assault. And I think it's a great way to end the season, Nick. I had a long chat with Willie about this on Thursday at Aintree. He spoke about how he goes around Cheltenham and Aintree, and people from Britain as well as from Ireland are saying, we're great, we're pleased you're doing it, and we hope you win. Well, there'll be lots of other people hoping he wins, lots of other people hoping Dan wins or Paul wins, and I think most people will just be enjoying the fact that this adds a really strong additional narrative to the end of the season, and Sandown next Saturday, it could be a momentous day.
All right, we told you yesterday that the Grand National winner had achieved the highest rating for a national winner by Timeform this millennium. There was not a massive surprise. He was the biggest winner, you could argue, over the 3 days of the Randolph's Grand National Festival. But we welcome Dan Barber in now, as we do every Tuesday, for the Timeform perspective. He wasn't the only winner, Dan, was he?
Yeah, well, Nick, I think the Grand National itself wants to go down as the main winner, even above the Grand National winner, just because of what a remarkably incident-free race it was. There's still 34 runners, which is more than any of these horses would face in any other race, pretty much. But it was down to 32 with a couple of non-runners. That's a fifth smaller than it would normally have been with the usual 40. But I think the key change is for definite on the way the race was run and the way the race might pan out in future years and the type of horses it will allow to come to the fore with Grade 1 winners abound in 2024 is that reduced run to the first fence, jockeys being a bit more reserved, and definitely a feeling that the pace took a long time to pick up, whereas normally they've got up such a head of steam by the time they reach the first that it's then set fair for a potentially chaotic renewal.
All right, so the Grand National itself was a winner. The winner was definitely a positive. Who else came out of the entry festival with their reputation burnished?
Well, a horse who didn't even have to stretch his legs, unless he was doing some exercise at home, but how many more compliments do we need to pay to Gaelic Warrior in the light of what happened during the 3 days at Aintree? We're always looking out, even within festivals, we're looking for how is the novice form working out. We do it at Cheltenham all the time, but the strength of the Arkell form was advertised to some tune. Two key runners came out of it who won races. Illity Tomps put a dent in the reputation to some extent of Grey Dawning and Ginny's Destiny in the manifesto, and then Founder 50 recovered from that awkward landing at the last to edge out Master Chewy, who, as it happens, Nick, was also representing the Arkell form. So Gaelic Warrior, without getting so much as a splash of mud on him, solidified his status as Timeform's best novice chaser with a rating of 169, which has nudged up a couple of pounds in the aftermath of Aintree.
All right. One of the most impressive winners of the week was Brighter Days Ahead. In the old days, I say the old days, 20, 30 years ago, if a good mare came along, it was a rarity. Is it now the norm, Dan?
Well, I hope so. We discussed on the show about how the programme was altered with this in mind, and it hasn't half started to bear fruit when you consider the quality of mares we've had in recent years. Three champion hurdle winning mares in the last decade or so. And you go and you look back to the Cheltenham Festival just gone, and potentially Lossy Mouth could have been a champion hurdle winning mare herself had she taken that route. Brighter Days Ahead is the next cab off the rank. She looks extremely special. She's got speed. She can jump. And yeah, not more. It's more mare, isn't it? Looking ahead to next season.
All right, let's talk about horses who maybe didn't have such a happy time of things at Aintree. And again, you mentioned Gaelic Warrior. There's one from the same stable who won't have been resting quite so easy in his box.
No, I don't have much of a doubt in my mind that he's the best novice hurdler, Ballyburn. Consider what he did to Slade Steele, who came out and won the Supreme. But the race in general that he won at the Cheltenham Festival, the Bear in Bingham, was taking blow after blow. The runner-up, well held in the race in which Brighter Days Ahead, Street Clear. The same for Il Atlantique, who again seemed to resent those more patient tactics. But that was possibly a low light of the Cheltenham Festival. I don't know if you agree, Nick. That sight of any rivals to Mullins completely out of the way. And as it happens, seemingly even within Mullins' stable, they were somewhat second raters as Ballyburn stamped his authority. His earlier form, great, but little doubt that the Cheltenham form took many more knocks than the Supreme Novices did.
And can we say the same about the Turners after the eclipse of Ginny's Destiny and Grey Dawning?
I think we probably can. I'd be less confident in that to some extent because I do feel they're extenuating circumstances, but the form didn't work out. You could argue that a tough race at Cheltenham took the edge off the two beaten horses. You could certainly say, I think, that it was a different type of race. Probably a first race of the festival, jockeys mindful the ground could be very testing. They were being a bit more circumspect. So it wasn't the bruising war that the Turners had been, but the way they were dismissed by an Upton trip, Elite Thompson, who again isn't a top flight Mullins novice, really, perhaps did prick their particular balloon. So Arkell, very much a winner over the Turners, just as the Supreme was very much a winner over the Bear in Bingham.
And what about the National itself? Let's go back to where we started. If we're talking about three Grade 1 winners finishing second, third and fourth to a horse who's a Grade 1 horse in all but name, are we now talking about the Grand National as just the next step for Gold Cup horses, do you think, in future? And the old, you know, good old reliable Nathans are a thing of the past?
I fear that is, I think. We don't want to be too reactive, but there may come a point, as you and I have discussed, where Grand Nationals are contested by Gold Cup winners. It might be almost edging towards that territory. You had four horses, you say, Nick, all Grade 1 winners. And I do fear for the old school sluggard who may have made his name winning Haydock Grand National Trials, winning Ida Chases, winning Bet365 Gold Cups. And no better example in that latest renewal than Kitty's Light, who has earned his corn, really, in those other marathon handicaps, but just lacked the class of those Grade 1 winners ahead of him when it really mattered on the sprint for home. So he emerged with immense credit, a massive performance from Kitty's Light against horses of that calibre. But it does feel like that is the welcoming in of a new age of Grand National. Unless you get another Red Marauder year, it's hard to escape the conclusion, as the performances of the likes of Panda Boy showed as well, that you just being able to stay well and jump is no longer enough. You have to have a fair bit more about you than that.
Well, if ever you needed evidence that time flies by, it's that Gore's Bridge, the famous sales company, are holding their first thoroughbred sale for 4 years with a sale of pointer-pointers and horses in training on Thursday. I was confounded when I read this and had to rack my brains. And as part of our relationship with Weatherby's every Tuesday when we go around the bloodstock world, this gives me a wonderful excuse to check in with Ed Donohue, who's the boss of Gore's Bridge Sale and whose family have been involved in this institution for an awful long time. Ed, just tell me a little bit about the return to thoroughbred action after the 4 year hiatus.
Yes, it's funny, Nick. We obviously were established very well with our breeze up, with our Gore's Bridge breeze up sale here, which Tattersall has acquired from us. And my brother Martin decided to retire this year, and Martin was at the helm of Gore's Bridge, and it was When I decided to take over Gorse Bridge, it was very much to the forefront of my mind to go back into the thoroughbred game. We're very well established and long established at the sport horse, in the sport horse industry, but it was due to probably the continuing ask by people in the thoroughbred business, when are we going to go back and start selling thoroughbreds? We're situated down south of Dublin, and there's, you know, Goffs and Tattersalls are the two sales companies in Ireland, and there's a lot of people not catered for down, particularly south of the country. So a fella called Michael Shefflin, very well known in the thoroughbred business, we were chatting one evening, and I was telling him that, you know, I definitely wanted to go back into the thoroughbreds, and I was just looking to try and see a niche, something that wasn't being done here in Ireland. And of course Michael came back fairly quickly with to try and get me to hold a point-to-point sale. Effectively what's happened, Nick, is all of the Irish handlers have to go to the UK to sell their point-to-pointers. There is no sale in Ireland bar the Punchestown the marquee sale during the Punchestown Festival, and for that you have the 200 grand horses or the 100,000 horses. Mm-hmm. But there's nowhere to sell the cheaper horse, you know, the placed point-to-pointer, the 5 grand horse, the 10 grand, the 20 grand horse. So Michael was adamant I take this on. We had I did a little bit of market research, and you know an awful lot of the point-to-point handlers. A lot of men, in fact, would have started their trade in Gorse Bridge back over the years. So I spoke to a lot of the likes of the Monbeg Dials and Colin Bow and an awful lot of the handlers to see was there an opening here, and they all felt it was something that we should do.
It struck me, Ed, you know, that in fact quite a big client base for you for that sort of anywhere between 5 and 50 or 70 grand point-to-pointer that might not be an absolute established star but might be a bit of a slow burner. A lot of that market could be British buyers, because surely those are the sort of horses that we need over here to kind of shore up that middle market that seems to be falling by the wayside in terms of horse population.
Yeah, exactly, Nick. Exactly. And you couldn't have said it more eloquently, really, because that's exactly what we intend to do. And that's where we have been getting such a great reaction. IT, Irish Thoroughbred Marketing, are behind this sale. And we have had quite a lot of English trainers, agents, coming over here on Thursday. There's a lot of them booked in, and they're coming themselves and they're bringing their vets, and we have a catalog of about 46 or 7 now, and we have at least, and the rest of them are nearly all placed horses, so there's going to be something for everybody.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about some of the stars in the catalog, or the horses that you think are going to be attracting most attention.
So we have some. I mean, the Monday Dials are very well supported there. There's a lovely horse, a small town kid. We have an absolute rake of winners. You know, we have something for everybody. We have about 20 winners. Shabby Hill, Small Town Hill, Small Town Kid, you know, the lovely horse, Jed on horse, Rock on Jed. We have some really, really nice horses. We have something for everybody here. Mm. We have that 5 grand horse and we have the 50 grand horse, Nick.
And Ed, of course, your most famous Gorsebridge export was an 800 quid horse, a certain Hewick, who I guess can grace the front of your catalogue for a little while yet.
Yeah, it's a great story. Shark Hanlon, Shark only lived a couple of miles over the road. Great story. Bought here for €850, sure, and look at the rest is history, isn't it? I mean, where would you get to like him? He's been some advertisement for Gore's Bridge as well as for Shark Hanlon. And you know what, Nick, it's all a dream, isn't it? You don't know. I mean, there's a lot of those horses in this sale on Thursday, and they could be anything. Because, you know, they're placed point-to-pointers, and they may be just raw individuals that just need a bit of time. You just don't know what you're going to have, and they're going to be affordable.
Ed, I wish you all the best with your return to the fray. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Yeah, and thanks, Nate. Thanks for having us on. All the best.
Well, here at Newmarket, a cold grey day is always enlivened by the presence of a few runners at the Craven meeting, trained by Andre Farb. Farb's horses are in ridiculously good form, even by his own high standards. Multiple stakes winners already this season, 8 from his last 24 as well. And he's got a couple of interesting runners this week, one of whom is in the Nurlan Bizakov Sumbay colours, the pale blue and yellow, and is called Narquez, and has an entry in tomorrow's Field and Stakes, and is currently, as I speak to you now, the second favourite. Tony Fry represents Nurlan Bizakov's interests and is with me now. Tony, really interesting manoeuvre this from Andre. Tell me what the thinking is behind running in the field and what the season might look like.
The thinking is that Monsieur Farb knows what he's doing. So his plan was always to come to Newmarket, or he definitely wanted to come to Newmarket with the horse. We had other options in France, and Nurlan and Andre spoke, and decided Andre wanted to come to France, and we abide by what the great man says.
And what do you think his reasoning is? Obviously, he likes the Roly Mile. He's had a lot of success here. The horse is fit from an easy win at Saint Cloud last time.
It was a facile victory. It was in heavy ground. Since then, the Mikhail and Andre have been very complimentary about the horse. I think it just might open up options for us. We'll see how he gets on. We have other options in France for the French 2000 guineas, so it might just make us think what we'd like to do. But A, they have to win, and then give us food for thought after.
From a very good family, I mean, Coolmore family originally, but a family that you're now curating. Tell me what you think his stamina requirements are going to be. By Sayuniad out of a Galileo mare.
I think a mile would be good for him, but when you go back through the pedigree, I'm sure he'd definitely get the Prix du Jockey Club, and Galileo could put plenty into it. We've had the family. We have a Kingman sister, Nelsha, who ran in the French Oaks, and she was a mile and a quarter filly. So I think I definitely Prix du Jockey Club shouldn't be a problem if he's good enough. But he seems to be shown enough to be competitive at a nice race at a mile. So again, it might be a nice problem to have if he was to be victorious.
Okay, you've got Al Farabi at Newmarket tomorrow as well, in a handicap for Roger Varian. But he's a lightly raced 4 year old. What sort of aspirations have you got for him?
It'll be his first time on turf for Roger. I think the ground should suit him. Again, he's out of a nice mare that was Group 1 placed at Nurlan bred, one of our first homebred good ones. I think he's off a low weight, and he'd go there with a good chance. He's a lovely character, a bit of a not a monkey, but he's just a real character, and he will be trying anyway. He'll be putting his best foot forward. I don't think the ground will be an issue, and I think the distance shouldn't be an issue as well. So fingers crossed for him.
Are you going to run Sanat in the Wood Ditton?
The plan is at the moment. Yeah, all being well, he'll be there as well. Again, he's taken a while to get to the race course. Just little niggles, but he's fine now, we'll see how he goes. It'll be we know more after. I don't think we're going there with any great expectations, but we'll see what happens.
Mr. Bizakov has won with 6 of his last 8 runners. Ramadan and Lazat would be the most high profile of them, both Group 3 winners. Ramadan won the Fontainebleau, beating Bourvatier. It looks strong form and made all the running as well for Christopher Head. How smart do you think Ramadan is? Again, another homebred.
Wiser people than me, as in the trainer and the owner. We think he's very smart. He's done nothing wrong. you know, I think the second horse will come on a bit for the run, but we don't know how much is up our sleeve yet as well. You know, he won his listed race very easily by 6 lengths in heavy ground. It was like a piece of work. So, you know, they said he'd had a run which would bring him on, but it was like a morning's work for him. He will definitely go for the French Guineas. Yeah, it's exciting because we think he's very nice.
And then what do you do with Lazat? Because this horse is now unbeaten. You're absolutely loaded with these horses in the sort of mile classic division.
Well, you make the most of them, Nick, as you know, because you never know what's around the corner. And normally it's when they say there's light at the tunnel, normally it's a train coming. Mm. So
well,
get carried away.
I get it. And he's a gelding, which complicates matters a little bit.
Yes, obviously he's not going for the classics, but I think it will give us options later in the year. He's an outstanding looking horse. He's sound. I think he's a one we could travel around the world if he stays sound and carries on showing his ability, because there's plenty of prize money. Obviously Australia could be a target at the end of the year. So you know, for the Golden Eagle. So it gives us options. There's been plenty of interesting people for him, but the boss will make a decision slowly. I think we might enjoy the horse.
This is going to be a breakthrough season, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's not overnight, because as you know, Nalan started, well, probably 20 years ago with horses and training, 15 years ago by Hesmans. So it's not come overnight. It's been plenty of blood, sweat and plenty of tears. So, I'm glad it didn't happen in the first year, because then you expect it every year and you think the game's easy, and it's not an easy game. It's difficult for everybody. But it's nice it has happened eventually, and we cross our fingers that it can continue through this season and see what next year brings as well.
All right, that was Tony Fry. Thanks to him, to Paul Nichols, to Charlie Appleby, to Dan Barber for their input earlier in the show, and of course to Lee Mottershead, who's with me now and has something for you for today.
I do, Nick. In the 255, it's the Mutter Sebek, new for 2024 handicap. Well, new to the Judy Camacho yard is Obelix, race last season for John and Thady Gosden. Ran some decent races, second in the big handicap at the July Festival. His form rather tailed off. He's joined Judy Camacho, has his first run for her at Newmarket this afternoon. Might well do better as the season goes on, but around 20 to 25 to 1, I thought he was worth an each way play on his first run for the yard. So Obelix in the 255 at Newmarket.
And we will find out tomorrow whether Lee's gall in tipping Obelix today is borne out, and whether you need to put an asterisk by that horse for the remainder of the season.
You really have been on form today, haven't you?
That's it from me. We'll see you again tomorrow. Stay safe out there. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with Fitstairs.